Spoiler warning. As promised, this is your spoiler warning for this episode. In the podcast, we talk about Avatar the Last Airbender, Dexter, and Game of Thrones. But we really only get into the finer plot points of Avatar the Last Airbender and Dexter. Check the podcast description for the timestamps of those discussions if you don't want to get spoiled. Now, on to the show. Part of the reason I settled on the topic of endings for the season two of the podcast was that I felt like I had a pretty natural thesis going into it. Based on my time in the Supernatural fandom, it was clear that even with a few years of distance from the finale, fans were still fighting over it.
Through the entire characterization of Dean of 15 years in the dustbin, hated it is putting it lightly.
The ending was heartbreakingly perfect. Sam was much better equipped to live without Dean, thanks in large part to all the things that Dean did over their lives to make sure that Sam would thrive.
Burn that trash finale. Dean was not supposed to die. This writing sucked ass.
It was a bittersweet but fitting ending and brought the brothers' journey full circle. I appreciate the narrative symmetry of it and found it heartbreakingly beautiful.
It removed the character development of Dean, made him die on a useless hunt when just one episode prior he defeated God. Dean shouldn't have died, period. Sam should have got a happy ending with Eileen. The Paris story was built the entirety of season 15. The finale just forgot about Eileen. Castiel, who is the main character, should never have been erased. He should have been rescued from the empty and should have been shown reuniting with Jack, Sam, and Dean.
The SPN finale was very polarizing in fandom, no question. There was so much discussion as to how they'd wrap, and this varied wildly between certain fandom camps. I was Team Butch and Sundance for Sam and Dean, as were many, but I was pretty sure we wouldn't get this, mostly because we wanted it, lol.
Unless you have a memory for old pop culture references like Dean, you might have missed that last one. The 1969 movie, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, ends with the two main characters going out together in a blaze of glory, which was the preferred ending of Supernatural for at least some fans. This is only a tiny selection of the thoughts and opinions I've gathered so far with my survey. If you want to give me your 2 cents, the survey is still up and I'll include it in the episode description. So, why are people still mad? On both sides. And is that why we still have such an active fan base, despite having no new spin-offs or short series on the horizon? I eventually came to a theory that I used as my central thesis for what was going on here. And the argument goes something like this. Really excellent shows with satisfying endings are remembered fondly by their fandoms, but fade because the story feels complete. Great shows with terrible endings also disappear from the cultural zeitgeist, but for the exact opposite reason. Fans are so mad or embarrassed by the ending of their show that they just drop it like a hot potato. But a great show with a divisive ending? Well, that just means that there's something to still argue about. Or try to correct with fan fiction written under the Fix-It tab, or go to fan conventions and try to see if the actors have any interest in reviving the show to, quote-unquote, correct the ending. And that's where I thought Supernatural sat on this spectrum. But, well, this is a strong argument to make, and I should do my due diligence and actually show you the evidence. Let's take a look at some actual evidence to see if I'm right. First up, the good show with a good ending. When I first realized I had unwittingly formulated this little theory, I started poking around Twitter. No, I won't call it X because that is dumb. And so I started asking folks what TV shows they thought nailed the ending. A few of the shows that came up time and time again were The Good Place, Black Sails, Buffy, Battlestar Galactica, New Girl, 6 Feet Under, Schitt's Creek, The Americans. Look, I could list these out forever, But let's just look at one or two examples.
I only have two shows that I say have perfect endings based off of, like, or, you know, are perfect shows in general, like perfectly land, like the beginning, middle, and end, everything ties up well.
This is my friend and entertainment reporter, Casey Mendoza. She works at the TV news outlet Scripps.
Oh, and also Silly Little Magazine. I founded that. It's about fandom, so that's relevant.
Anyway, here's Casey's two perfect shows.
The show that I grew up watching, so I watched it live when it came out and kind of experienced the whole, like, week-by-week traditional TV structure and watched it over years, was Avatar The Last Airbender. That, to me, is a perfect ending.
If you haven't seen Avatar, the cartoon, not the James Cameron movie with the blue people, the basic plot is about a world where people can use powers based on the four elements of wind, water, fire, and earth. And the story begins with a Fire Nation who's begun to wage an imperialist war, a war they have slowly been winning. The world's only hope is the Avatar, the only one who can master all four elements. Except the Avatar is just a young airbender named Aang who doesn't want to be a part of the bloodshed, even though he knows he must stop the Fire Nation.
What's really fascinating about, like, my relationship to Avatar The Last Airbender, and I feel like it might be similar for other people, is that when that show first started coming out, I didn't really have internet. So I wasn't on, like, internet spaces, and it was a kid's show, right? So there probably was, and I joined it later in life, like a Reddit subreddit dedicated to the show, but I wasn't on Reddit until I was in college. But still, I felt a sense of, like, fandom with Avatar because a lot of my friends in middle school and high school watched it together. It was a fun little, like, equalizer almost between, like, the anime kids and everybody else. And then it was on Nickelodeon. It was easy to watch. And it was just also very good.
A lot of people, it seems, agree with Casey here. The animated series won 9 awards, including a 2001 Emmy Award and 2009 Peabody Award. And like Simone Biles, the show stuck the landing.
With Avatar, it's so easy to go to the ending where Aang defeats the Fire Lord, not by killing him, but by taking away his bending, as like a reflection of the way he had been diplomatic the entire series, how he was always preaching nonviolence. And like, there are so many like deep layers into the way his character progressed and the other characters progressed that like I still think about it as an adult.
I definitely agree with this. Avatar is one of those shows that knew its tone and core themes and honored those at the end of the series. As a viewer, you were expecting a big climactic battle, and you got one. But instead of killing the big bad, Aang stayed true to his core character and found a way to end the conflict without death. This fits the first part of my initial thesis. Great show, great ending, fondly remembered by basically everyone I know who watched the show. The fandom, while historically quite active, seemed to be mostly dormant until the pandemic when the show came to streaming and Netflix realized the golden goose that they had licensed.
One of the things that I loved during the pandemic was when Avatar The Last Airbender went on Netflix and everybody who didn't grow up on it finally watched it. And like Netflix's little data algorithm said, like, wow, people loved this.
And now Netflix has created a live-action remake of the original cartoon. So maybe the fandom is more active now that there's quote-unquote new content for fans to engage with. But going back to the original series, I think this still fits with my original thesis. The second show that Casey mentioned as a perfect show with a perfect ending was Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. And look, I could talk all day about FMA, as us fans call it, both the original series and the more manga-accurate Brotherhood series. And I do agree it's a series that has an ending that just fits. But it doesn't fit my pattern of TV shows that have ended well but don't have active fan bases. Fullmetal Alchemist still maintains a strong, active fandom. Just last year, I went to San Diego Comic-Con and I saw two or three Fullmetal Alchemist cosplayers. That's a show that ended in 2018. Or it really ended in 2004, but that was the Japanese original version and not the English dub. And the original manga, or comics, started even longer ago in 2001 and ended in 2010. But there are still plenty of fans who create videos and write fan fiction about both iterations of FMA. So my first theory that strong endings put fandoms to rest didn't quite hold. What about great shows with terrible endings? Are they erased from our cultural memories? My personal example of this would have to be Dexter. It was a clever Showtime show about a serial killer who only ever killed other murderers and worked in a crime lab for the Miami PD. It had quippy writing, dark undertones, a fantastic cast, but the last season just felt like a garbage fire. When the plot led to the inevitable discovery by Dexter's sister of his secret hobby, I didn't think they were going to kill her off or send him literally into a hurricane, presumably a Miami-style suicide, just to reveal that he had secretly become a lumberjack in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah, I'm still mad. And from what I remember, the fandom for that show just vanished, as if everyone else was as annoyed as I was. Even when they tried to reboot the show for an additional season, friends I knew who had watched the original agreed that the show had lost its goodwill and they just weren't interested any longer. But I think the real big cultural touchstone would have to be Game of Thrones. The fantasy epic about the political machinations and all-out war for control of a country of Westeros amassed a huge viewership. According to the website Statista, Season 7, the penultimate season, regularly had over 10 million viewers. In 2019, over 30% of Americans counted themselves as at least casual fans of the show. But that popularity didn't hold with the eighth and final season. Over a third of viewers stated that they did not like the series finale, and that's putting it mildly, in my opinion. Most former fans mentioned poor writing as one of the major reasons for their disappointment. Fansplaining's Elizabeth Minkle, who you heard last episode, summed it up neatly.
Something like the Game of Thrones ending, I think everyone agreed. Like, I didn't see anyone defending that from any corner of that fandom, you know.
Weirdly, even though it was previously a vibrant fandom, the final season caused that to evaporate into negative memes about how the plot made no sense, and characters were acting, well, out of character. Despite all of that, HBO greenlit a prequel spin-off series called House of the Dragons not that long after. I was in the big Hall H ballroom at Comic-Con when the show premiered its early footage, and Matt Smith, of Doctor Who fame, got up on stage to talk about the world of Westeros. But most of the people in that room were just camping out for the Star Trek and Marvel panels planned for later in the day. The final season of Game of Thrones was the end of fans caring about the franchise.
I don't see the same kind of fandom coalescing around House of Dragon in the same way that it did with Game of Thrones. And I wonder whether that's people just being like, you know what, I'm not sure I want to invest in this because it didn't end so well last time. So I'm not really sure if I trust, you know, maybe you don't trust that world or those that kind of world anymore because you know that you got burned once before and you don't want to go through it again.
This is Rebecca Williams from the University of South Wales.
My job title is Associate Professor in Media Audiences and Participatory Cultures.
We'll hear more from Rebecca later on, but I thought she was right on the money about how the creators of fandom, the fanfiction writers and artists and video makers, how they seem to have abandoned the world of Westeros altogether. Williams' academic word for this content-generating type of fan community is productive fandom.
Once you've lost sort of trust, and once you've lost that sort of belief that you kind of put this your trust in those people to make it good and make it what you want. Once that's gone, and why would you spend your time writing fan fiction, you know, if you really, really can't engage with it? So yeah, I'd be really interested to see with Game of Thrones, actually, if people have gone back and tried to make it better, or just say just quit and walked away from it.
I guess someone has to be watching House of the Dragon, because a second season is slated for release in June 2024. I just don't know who that audience is. So Game of Thrones seems to fit into the category of great show plus bad ending equals fans drop it like Bran dropped from the tower in Winterfell. But wait, there's more. When I asked the same question to those who work in the television industry, the responses weren't what I expected.
For example, like, I know a lot of people had issues with Game of Thrones ending. And that's a very, like, persons that are just kind of out there and eat there and everybody knows about. And it's like, but I also know people who really enjoyed the last season of Game of Thrones. But I feel like sometimes the voices of dissent and anger and frustration are a little louder, especially when they're, whether they're on Reddit or Twitter or whatever, like, you know, the complaining gets a little louder than the people who are like, actually, that really worked for me and I like this.
Jeff Hirsch, a screenwriter and co-producer for the TV series The Flash, was much kinder to TV endings that fans had a very visceral negative reactions to.
I've always been very, like, accepting of what the creators are presenting to me. Like, very rarely do I have a very, like, ugh, I can't believe they did that.
And I did wonder if, having come from a creator's experience, he was more likely to be forgiving of endings that don't quite work. Rob Benedict, who played Chuck Shirley on Supernatural, seemed to share that more forgiving attitude.
I didn't hate Game of Thrones. I didn't hate, in the moment, people, you know, people have a real problem with the Game of Thrones final season. And I didn't, I like really appreciated it for what it was at the time. I really wanted it to be great. For that show, it was interesting. I watched it. I'd never watched that show. And I caught up on it before the final season. So then I watched the final season in real time. So for me, that was really exciting to see it in real time. So I was sort of going like, okay, yeah, that's the ending. And that's what it is, you know. And I'm also not a big critic of things. So I appreciate it. Now looking back, I'm like, okay, people have said things. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. I can see that. It could have been better. It could have been that. But it is what it was. And then you're like, okay, that's what it is.
We'll hear more from Rob in later episodes, but for now, it definitely seems that the folks I spoke with who have experience working in TV were more forgiving about show endings. In fact, I emailed a fellow podcaster and radio host, Greta Johnson, who hosted a show recapping each Game of Thrones episode as they came out back in the day. Today, she's the co-host for the official HBO podcast covering House of the Dragon. She didn't have time to talk, but said that from her vantage, the fandom is thriving. She thinks GOT is more a story about the perils of adapting an unfinished series than it is a show that botched the ending. And even outside the Game of Thrones example, shows like BBC's Sherlock, which had an absolute mess of a last season, still seem to have an active fan base.
I have a lot of Sherlock mutuals because that was when I was first on Tumblr. And I have, like, all those terms muted, and I see them posting about them every day. And they're not angry posts. They're like, sometimes I'll click on them out of curiosity, and it'll be like a picture of Benedict Cumberbatch, and they're like, pretty guy. And I'm like, still, all right, I guess, you know?
So even a show with a bad ending doesn't disappear from the fan spaces completely, as I had expected. And maybe there isn't really a clean line between good and bad endings. I guess I'm comfortable with saying there's no show that had an ending which made everyone who watched it happy. Just like there's not an ending I can find that everyone truly hated. So, every ending is divisive? Jeff Hirsch thinks that might be the case.
Because we're all coming in here with our own expectations, and we're all focused on different parts of the story. I mean, Flash is a great example. There are fans who are there for the comic book superhero villain material, and then there are fans there who are there for the relationships. And that's the beautiful thing of that show. The show does both. So you can have these two different groups, and they're looking for different things in their pathos in the show.
Are we not all watching the same thing? Elizabeth doesn't think so either.
I think one thing that a lot of fans, and whatever, I think audiences in general have a hard time wrapping their heads around the idea that, like, the show you think you're watching may not be the show they're making, and the show you think you're watching probably isn't the show that the guy in the next apartment who's also watching it thinks he's watching, right? You know, like, I think it's very easy in fan circles to hear a lot of other people on the same page and believe that you all are interpreting the same way and, you know, like, seeing the same thing.
Look, we've all heard about echo chambers on social media and how it's making us all self-segregate into bubbles. But these bubbles are usually describing political affiliations, not television fandoms. Yet the principle remains the same. DePaul University researcher Paul Booth, who you heard in the previous episode, views it through the eyes of community dynamics.
This notion that there's something that you're looking for out of the show is going to be guided by the community that you're part of. And that's going to be guided by the type of text that you're a fan of.
Who are our favorite characters? Do we support a particular relationship within the show? What do we consider to be the core themes or thesis of the show? Basically, when we sit down in front of the TV, why are we watching?
Like we talked about, people watch for different reasons and people see different things in it. But I think about, you know, your Supernatural example, right? Are people wishing it had ended earlier, like one episode earlier, right? Or two episodes earlier, because that is where their particular favorite character had their conclusion versus the full kind of arc of the whole story coming together? Or is it because what ended up happening at the end wasn't what they wanted or wasn't what they expected?
Don't worry. We're going to get into the data of the last few episodes of Supernatural. But I want to focus in on something Paul just brought up. He compared why people might view the real ending as being when a favorite character completed their character arc, and not necessarily when the plot ended.
People have been writing about endings and narratives for hundreds and hundreds of years. I think most fans like endings that, this is going to sound silly, but that conclude, you know, that have something that the character arc has been concluded. So there are story arcs, narrative arcs, and then there are kind of plot, like character arcs. And story arcs are like what's happening in the world, and the stories and character arcs are how the character has changed. And we care more about character arcs, just generally as readers and as viewers.
So for example, in Supernatural, a character arc would be what happens to Jack, while a story arc would be whether the world ended.
When character arcs are satisfied, that feels like a good ending. But I don't feel like we need narrative closure as much. This may just be me. And again, I liked the ending of Lost. So take this with an enormous grain of salt, a salt lick. But I think about something like The Sopranos, right? Talk about a divisive ending. There's no story ending, right? We have no idea what happens to most of the plot lines, but we actually kind of have a little bit of a character ending for almost every character except for Tony. And that's only because they're very deliberately leaving that out and leaving it for us to discuss. So to me, that's a really satisfying ending because it feels like it's whatever happened, we know where the characters are.
So we all agree that endings are important, but we still aren't very good at defining a good one from a bad one. Or why some still maintain an active fandom while others fade. I know I used this last time, but I love the way that Richard Speight Jr. succinctly told me.
Again, what are you going to do? Like, what would have made people happy? Nothing, because nobody wants it to go away. Some people would have been more satisfied by something, maybe, but not everybody. You know, yeah. Whoever was satisfied by something would have left other people feeling cheated. So, you know, it's an unsolvable crime, an unwinnable war. It's a, you know, fool's errand, blah, blah, blah. All the cliches they can think of. It's impossible to get it right. And that in itself is what makes it interesting.
It may be an unsolvable crime, but we can still try to put this question to the test with data. Next time on In Defense of Fandom, let's play scientist with some real data. See you in 2 weeks. Editorial support was provided by Dr. Anna Funk. Music was composed and performed by Chris Scott. Cover art was designed by Liz Hand. Thanks to the friends who voiced some of the fans who responded in my survey. I'll include their names in the show notes. In Defense of Fandom was made possible through an unhealthy obsession and your support via Ko-fi. Thanks especially to Meg B and Catalanta, who are the first supporters of this season of the pod. If you're not already supporting the show and you'd like to, you can find a link in the show notes to our Ko-fi. A one-time donation of any amount will get you access to behind-the-scenes content, including the audio of my full conversation with Richard Speight Jr. and other guests you'll be hearing from across the season. Your support is deeply appreciated.
My voice is going to be used publicly. I got to know what the fuck I'm reading.
Oh my God, read it now.
No, I'm not reading it. I'm reading it in with my mind.